Well, Anne can't believe that February 1st is here. Do you realize that a month ago today was Boxing Day? Maybe you did, because the Visa and MasterCard statements came out this last week. So we're looking at them, and we just wish we could knock a number off of the end of them, and then they could probably be manageable. Well, welcome here. I'm Sid, and I love being here, and I'm glad you're here this morning. Well, going back a little bit to where we were a month ago was Christmas. You've made it through. You made it through the deep freeze. And that probably seems like a long time ago. But one of the things that we like to do as a family, or that I like to do at Christmas time over Christmas, is puzzles. And Leanne and I didn't buy a new puzzle this year, but we did go out and we looked at some puzzles. But there are some puzzles that I would never do. And those are the ones that say 1,200 pieces, and you look at the box, and you know that 800 pieces of those are blue sky. You guys hate that too? Oh, man. I like a picture that is very clear. I want a picture on the puzzle box that has a variety of colors and shapes and significant variations. Every piece has its own distinct place to be, and it just makes it a lot more enjoyable for me. Of course, being Dutch, I'm genetically predisposed to being impatient. But hey, that's okay. But there are times in my life where this reflects somewhat my faith journey. I want a faith that is crystal clear, everything has its place, and everything makes sense. However, this is not always the case. There have been times in my journey with God that I feel like I have a puzzle that is like those 800 pieces of blue sky, or maybe dark night. You start to get a few pieces and you're thinking, okay, we're making some progress here. The puzzle pieces are fitting together. You get three or four or five of them together, and then pretty soon the rest don't fit. And you end up going back and taking those pieces apart and starting over, trying to make sense of what it is that you have to work with. And when that's reflective of my journey of faith, the thing that comes along is questions. And I get a lot of questions. As those questions pile up, often amidst the uncertainty of our life, our faith can become a casualty. If there's not a place to process those things, a space to process them in, the questions that we have, our journey of faith or our journey towards faith can be derailed. Maybe you're sitting here today and you just have a bag of puzzle pieces and they're all that same color. And maybe that puzzle that was once together, but life happened, has come apart, and you have no idea where to start, or even if you want to start or continue. I know I'm not alone with this. And if that is where you are today, you are not alone, and welcome to church. In the midst of all this, there's questions that often run through my mind. And there's one that runs through my mind quite often. Sometimes it's a question, and sometimes it's just a simple statement. And the statement is this: there has got to be more. It's a question I ask in my journey in life, and maybe it's a question that you ask as well. And as a church, we ask it, and we seek to try to answer it. We have different classes. You often, Luann talked about one coming up, but there's all sorts of classes. We have Connected and Centered and Equipped. We have children's ministries going on right now. We have youth going on right now, grade 6 and 7 upstairs. We have youth on Thursday and Friday. Next week, we're going down to Deer Valley Meadows with 45 of our youth. That's going to be fun for them. And in all that, we are all searching for the answer to that question or that statement. There has got to be more. And you may wonder, does God have anything to say about this? And He does. Over the last few weeks, we have been journeying through a series titled Experiencing God, because we don't want to look back on the experiences that we have. We do that, but really we're looking ahead that there's got to be more than what was and where we are right now. And we've been journeying through the Gospel of John, digging through some of the miracles that were there. And John was one of Jesus' closest friends. So if you have the New Testament, if you're fairly new to church, Bible, that kind of stuff, we have the Old Testament that was before Christ. And then we have the New Testament, which sort of starts with the beginning of Jesus' you know, introduction to the world, his birth, and then kind of moves forward. And John was one of Jesus' closest friends, and he spent lots of time with him. He spent days with him. He spent weeks with him. He spent months with him. And he writes down a document, things that Jesus did, which would become scripture and one of the most widely read books in the whole Bible. And John tells us the reason for why he is going to write, or why he did write, the Gospel of John. He's writing this as an older man. Now, I have a friend. He's kind of weird. He's not here today, so you're okay, Jim. I have a friend, and when he wants to figure out if he wants to read a book or not, he gets the book, he goes to the last chapter, and he reads the whole last chapter. Isn't that weird? Like, that's the fun part. When you get to the end and you figure out what happened. But he reads it, and if it's a really good ending to the book, then he goes back and he reads the rest of the book. Well, we can kind of do that this morning. We're going to jump ahead, and we're going to look at the reason why John wrote the gospel that became the Gospel of John. And it's this, in John 20, verse 30 and 31, it says, Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book, but these are written, the ones that he has written down there, that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name. And this morning we come to John chapter 5. We're going to read verses 1 to 16 of Jesus' interaction with a man who has been paralyzed for 38 years. Let's read this. Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. Now there is in Jerusalem near the Sheep Gate a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. One who had been there, an invalid for 38 years, when Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else comes on ahead of me and gets in." And Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your mat, and walk." The day on which this took place was a Sabbath. And so the Jewish leader said to the man who had been healed, "It is the Sabbath. The law forbids you to carry your mat." But he replied, "The man who made me well said to me, 'Pick up your mat and walk.'" So they asked him, "Who is this fellow who told you to pick it up and walk?" The man who had been healed had no idea who it was, for Jesus had slipped away into the crowd that was there. Later, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, "See, you are well again. Stop sinning or something worse may happen to you." The man went away and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who had made him well. So because Jesus was doing these things on the Sabbath, the Jewish leaders began to persecute him. Well, here we have three characters in the story that we're going to look at. First off, we see Jesus. Jesus had come into Jerusalem to celebrate one of the annual feasts that happened in Jerusalem. And it was kind of required that you go there. So Jesus comes to Jerusalem. Jerusalem is filled with lots of people, more than its usual population because of these festivals. And Jesus is walking by a pool with his disciples. Now, if you were coming into town and the population had exploded here and people were all over the place, you might have quickly walked by this area. Here gathered the sick, the lame, and the paralyzed. Now, don't think of gray nuns or Royal Ellicott or anything like that. Think 2,000 years ago on a hot day, possibly hundreds of people laying around. These people were poor. What they wore on their back was probably all most of them owned. So it probably didn't get washed very often. The smells would have been strong. Disease and sickness were all around. Not a place to linger, not a place to stop and go to. Yet we see Jesus, the compassion of Jesus. He is not avoiding the group of people, the outcast. He actually goes to them and he sees them. And he stops there and he focuses on this one man. A man who had been coming to this pool off and on. We don't know if he was there every day. Probably not. But he'd been there off and on for 38 years. He had struggled. Now, if you have a hard copy Bible here today, you notice that it goes verse 1, verse 2, verse 3, verse 5. Verse 4 is kind of missing, maybe in your Bible. But verse 4 has kind of been added in later. It's in some of the later manuscripts, not the early ones. But basically, it tells us what was going on there. The belief was that an angel of the Lord would come down and stir this pool of water on occasion. We don't know how often their belief was. But as the angel did that, the first person in the pool was healed. Now, the Bible is just stating that. It's not saying that's what happened. That's what they believed. And that's why they were all laying around the pool, waiting for the water to be stirred. Now, archaeology and those kind of things say there was probably two streams of water that came together. And at different times, the water would come and there'd be little bubbles in the water. That could be what was happening. But anyhow, they believed that this was the place where you could be healed. That's all kind of beside the point, because here was a man that for 38 years had placed his hope in a hopeless solution. It hadn't worked for him. And here we see the compassion of Jesus as he stops at a place most avoided. And he looks at this man and he sees him. He knows him and his heart goes out to him. Now, there are many other stories of Jesus interacting with people who knew who he was. Last week, Pastor Egbert spoke of a Roman official who had come a day's walk to find Jesus because he believed that Jesus would heal his son who was sick back at home. And Jesus interacts with this man and says, your son is healed. And he goes back. He doesn't take Jesus with him. That was his initial thought. But he had faith that Jesus would heal him. And he goes back and he finds out, yeah, at the hour that he had interacted with Jesus, his son had been healed. And so there was faith there for that guy. But here we have a guy who has no idea who Jesus was. He's fixated on the pool. Yet right in front of him was the God of the universe, the creator of all things. In chapter 4, if you go to chapter 4 of John, we find the story of the Samaritan woman. And Jesus had sat by a well and told her about living water. Water that if she partook of it, which was himself, she would never thirst again. The longing in her heart, the part in her, inside of her that longed for something more. This woman had been married for 5 different guys, and the guy she was living with was, she was looking for something and had yet to find it. And Jesus says, look to me. I can give you living water and you will never thirst again. And this was the God who was standing right in front of this man. And here the man's focused on the water, and with compassion of a loving God, Jesus doesn't make a scene. He doesn't say, hey, everybody. Okay. Whoa. You know, like, everybody gather around. See this guy here? No. He simply says, get up, take your mat, and walk. And at once, he was cured. Something happened in his legs and his body, and whoop, and up he was going. The incredible compassion of Jesus. You see, if you want to know what God is like, where do you look? Nope. You look to Jesus. Read through the Gospel of John. Write down, what was Jesus like? And at the end of doing all that, you'll come up with what God is like. God is filled with compassion and he cares deeply. Next, let's look at the man. This is an interesting guy. It's his very first encounter with Jesus. He's a recipient of God's grace. He doesn't know Jesus. It seems he has never heard of him. And he experiences a miracle. And he had absolutely no inkling of faith coming from him that would make this miracle happen. So it wasn't him. It was all Jesus doing this. So now if you think, if you have been healed after being sick and paralyzed on a mat for 38 years and you'd been suffering, you think you'd be pretty pumped. However, we don't really sense that from this guy. He has a brief encounter with the Jews. We'll talk about that in a second. And then he heads off with the crowds to the temple. That's where everybody was kind of going. And it was a place most likely he had never been before, because of his broken body, he wasn't allowed into the temple. And plus, he didn't have the legs to get there. And Jesus also slips away into the crowd. And Jesus heads to the temple. And here again, we see the compassionate heart of Jesus. Amongst the thousands in the temple, Jesus seeks after him and he finds him. because Jesus was concerned not just for his momentary healing, what happened at the pool, and by momentary I mean just for this life. Jesus was concerned for his forever well-being, his life after this life. I am sure Jesus had many words to share with this guy, but ultimately the choice was this man's, whether he would follow Jesus. And Jesus tells him to change his ways. And there's an interesting little thing there. He says, stop sinning. Okay, maybe, did sin get him there? A little later on in John chapter 9, we find a man who was blind. And Jesus says, no, this guy isn't blind because he sinned. But there's something here maybe where Jesus says, you know, you've got a problem. Get it right. And so he calls him to account to change his ways. And this gentleman goes off. And he returns to the Jews who had asked, who is it that healed you? And they weren't like a friendly bunch going, oh, we'd like to, like, you know, say, wow, this guy's amazing. They were out to get Jesus. We'll talk about that here in a second as well. But he had been miraculously healed, and yet he walks somewhat away from Jesus. And we never really hear any more of his story. Now, one of our young adults has a story to share that was, I was talking with actually Adria this week, and she shared a little story, and it was really cool. Now, unfortunately, this is funny because we're talking about a guy getting healed, and Sydney Switzer was going to come, but she's sick today. So, because Jesus isn't out to just heal every single person in the world, he had a specific point for this guy here, and but anyhow, so we want to pray for Sydney. So I put it out to my young adult, like, we have a special young adult, and they're all guessing. They got one guess. They all struck out except for Charles, but he had inside information. So Charles, I got a gift card for you. Anyway, this is from Sydney, the other Sydney, the girl Sydney. So it's kind of close. I mean, my name is Sydney as well. My dad spelt it the girl's way. So here we go. 2 years ago, this is her words, 2 years ago, some friends and I decided to go to West Edmonton Mall to do some evangelism, to go out and try to share God's love with those at West Edmonton Mall. As I was walking through the mall, I had a very sharp and persistent pain in my leg. I never get pain in my legs, so I decided to stop and ask God if there was a reason for it. As I waited on God, I felt him say, there is someone with leg pain that he wants to heal. I began to look around for obvious signs of injured legs, crutches, or limping, or casts, but I didn't see anything like that. Instead, a Middle Eastern family caught my eye, and I decided to go to them. I introduced myself to them and shared that I believed in God and felt he wanted to heal someone with pain in their leg. The dad shared with me that he has had many leg surgeries and was expecting another one soon, as he was in constant pain. They also shared that their son was having knee problems recently. I asked if I could pray for them to be healed, and they shared they are Muslim, but they would be open to prayer, which they often are. The family of three joined hands and came close to me. I invited God to come and heal them, and the dad immediately said that he had a hot and tingling sensation in his leg. I shared that I believed that was the Holy Spirit healing him. The dad and the son then tested out their legs to see how they felt, and they said they no longer had any pain. God had healed them. So you think, oh, okay, momentary, whatever. 1 year later, this is Sydney. I was walking at Southgate Mall with my mom, Adria, and I saw the same man. I introduced myself to him as the strange girl in the mall that prayed for him. He remembered me and shared that he didn't have any pain in his leg all year and never needed the surgery he was expecting to have. Isn't that cool? He then asked me to pray for his business as it was not doing so well. It was amazing that he knew God healed him the first time and believed he could do something miraculous again. That's a great story from Sydney. It was cool because we see a little bit of a picture here. Jesus heals this man at the pool, and then he goes and he finds him again. Sydney was used by God to help have a healing in this man's leg. And a year later, she interacts with him again. And then in talking with Adria, Adria's like, you know what? We need to connect with them again. And God probably will bring them together because he seems to be doing that, drawing them along a path. Because Adria and Sydney's real desire is that they meet the healer, Jesus. Not that you just experience a healing, but you meet the healer. All right. So we pray that God will continue to nudge him towards faith. Let's look at our final little group here. The Jews, the religious people. This man may have been indifferent towards his healer, but the religious leaders were hostile to Jesus. Their only concern was that this guy was carrying his mat. And it was the Sabbath. Now you might think, oh, I've never heard of the Sabbath, or maybe you have. But the Sabbath was a day God had placed in the week of the Jewish people and the Israelites to be a day of refreshing and renewal of body and mind, where you could not do the things that you had been doing all week in a life that was probably pretty hard. So you didn't have to go out and plow the fields or do those kind of things. You took a day off to stop and to rest and to rejuvenate. And yet the religious people had taken this one day and they had created so many layers of their own traditions and rules on top of the Sabbath rule that they had taken it and it had become an absolute burden to them. And it was buried under religion. There was no rest for them at all. Now you think, okay, that was Old Testament times. But I found, I went online and I found in 1992 in April, this is from the Tel Aviv newspaper. It says, Israeli tenants let three apartments in the predominantly or ultra-Orthodox Tel Aviv suburb of Ben Brak burn while they asked a rabbi whether a call to the fire department on the Sabbath would violate Jewish tenants. Observant Jews are forbidden to use telephones on the Sabbath because to do so would involve breaking an electric current, which is considered a form of work. They are, however, permitted to break the Sabbath in case of an emergency. In the half hour it took probably to find the rabbi, because you couldn't phone him, the rabbi said, yes, you could call the fire department. But meanwhile, two neighboring apartments burned to the ground. No one was injured in the blaze. Still today, rules. Rules, rules. This is the point in Jesus' journey, and it's a significant turn. From this point on, the religious people started to persecute Jesus. Once this man had found out who it was that had healed him, he had ran back on his newly healed legs to rat out Jesus as to who is the one. And verse 16 tells us that from that point on, they aggressively began to persecute Jesus, and this would intensify, leading toward his crucifixion. The Jewish push for Jesus' death began with a healed guy carrying his mat on the Sabbath. They had completely missed God in their midst. So my question for us today, where are you at in the journey? Is there any one of these characters that you can kind of connect with? Do you see yourself in one of them? Do you look at people with Jesus' heart of compassion? Now, one of my young adult leaders here asked me, he's like, are those stories that you tell real? Because I got lots of stories, probably because I'm really old. but we just do weird things, my wife and I. My wife's really weird, okay? I came home just before Christmas Eve, and she goes, oh, I was driving around in our complex. We live in a townhouse complex. And there was this guy kind of just wandering aimlessly around. And as she drove by, he smiled at her. And she smiled back. And then she kind of drove around and he smiled at her again. So she stopped, rolled down the window and talked to him. He'd just been in Canada for not very long. English, very difficult to understand. But anyhow, this gentleman came with her to Christmas Eve service and then went with her after. We had a little party at our house and he joined us. And those are the kind of things that we do. Now, why does my wife do that? I asked that. Why does my wife do that? But it's because she sees people with God's eyes and with God's heart. And she looks at them and she goes, here's a guy who's obviously lonely because he was chattering her ear off in another language that had English words thrown in. And she engaged with him and we begin this journey, a journey towards Jesus. Or maybe your faith today is, maybe you're a little indifferent. That could be the journey that we're on. Or maybe you have a heart that is hostile towards God. You may not be here. Now, just to clarify here, you can not be hostile towards God, but you could be very angry at God. As we process and go through life, there are things that happen in our life that bring anger. And we go, God, why are you doing this? And that is totally fine. God's big enough to take your anger and your frustrations. But look towards Him for your answers to life. So anyhow, John, going back, John invites us through this story and many others through the Gospel of John. We're going to look at a couple verses here. And he says this, John 1:12, yet to all who received him, Jesus, to those who believed in his name, Jesus, he gave the right to become children of God. And then John 20:29. Then Jesus told him, this was, I think, Thomas wasn't going to believe unless he actually saw Jesus. He says, believe, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. You and I are the ones who have not seen, and yet many of us believe because of what we know and what we have read and what we experience with Jesus. And then John writes what we talked about before. These are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. He has written all these things so that we might believe and have life in his name. So we want to be a place here at Grace Point, a place where you can journey with and towards Jesus. And we want to be a place where each Sunday we leave to be Jesus in the world God has placed us in, whether that is school, university, work, home. And so I want to close this morning with the posture of what a follower of Jesus looks like. And it's one that, this isn't like a special formula, but it's one that I think about, and I want us to think about it too. So the posture of a follower of Jesus is knees bent in surrender to him. As we seek to follow Jesus, what does that look like? Read through John and see how John treated, how Jesus treated and loved people, and surrender to the God who was there. Eyes lifted to Jesus. We focus on Jesus. Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd. Jesus is my shepherd. We look up and we open our eyes there. Ears tuned to listen. Now, Sydney, as she was walking through West Edmonton Mall, her ears were tuned to listen. And God placed a thought in her mind. And with great courage, she's like, my knees were knocking as I was going. Like, am I nuts? And yet she went because her ears were tuned. And then her hands actively serving. And I think this is key. You wonder, how do I share Christ with people? Often it may be something tangible that you do with them. And I know I'm a guy. I'm better at like shoveling my neighbor's walkway. Or yesterday, my neighbor on this side had some of my tools. And then a little while later, I'm down on the neighbor on the other one here. She needs a toilet replaced. And so we're checking that out. We're going to replace her toilet on Wednesday. You just do stuff. My wife's more hey, let's hear your heart and talk and care deeply for people. But where are you at? Are your knees bent? Are your eyes lifted? Are your ears in tune? And are your hands actively seeking to serve others with the intent that they meet Jesus? So, last question. Who in your world has God placed across your path? And maybe you, like Jesus and like Sydney, need to double back and engage with them in such a way that they may meet the healer, Jesus. Wouldn't it be great if this place became a place where we as a people who love God, and because we love God, we go out, and wherever we go out throughout our week, Jesus is there because he lives in us. We are there and we see with his heart, we serve with his hands, and we love people. So that's our challenge to you. Think of somebody. Who is it this coming week that God has placed? Or maybe you haven't met them yet, but this week you will. See them and love them with Jesus' eyes. I'm going to get our worship team to come back up, and we're going to close in prayer here, and we're going to get our ushers as well. The time where we give back. We give back to God what he has entrusted to us to steward the funds that we give us. So our ushers will come by. If you're new with us today and you want us to get to know you, there's a welcome card there. You can fill that out, give it to us, give it to the Welcome Center, and we'd love to get to know you. Pray with me. Father, thank you for your goodness to us. Lord, help us to believe in who you are. Not because we have this unfounded faith, but we can go back and as John wrote of who you were so that we would remember him, not knowing that we would be reading his words, but we would remember the God of the universe that walked amongst us. And he didn't walk with the high and mighty. He walked with the lowly and the outcast and those without hope, without a home often, and without any status. And he cared deeply for them. He wanted to touch them. Yes, at times, physically, but he wanted to touch their forever life, that they would put their trust in him and move, as he would say throughout John, from darkness into the living light of being loved by Jesus. Father, help us to surrender ourselves to you today and to believe and to make a difference in our week as we go out. So we ask for this. Thank you, too, for a chance to give back to you. In Jesus' name.